Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to another episode of Driving to the Basket. I'm Mike, and as always, hope you're all doing super, super well today. Coming off the tails here of another loss, this one to the Indiana Pacers from a really depleted Pistons roster. Of course, the big news of today is number one, Asar Thompson, out for the rest of the season with a blood clot. That is scary stuff. I'm just going to leave it to the experts to explain what the implications of blood clots are. Depends on, as I understand it, what the nature of them is. But I would imagine we probably won't hear about that for a little while. So it's up in the air. Either way, of course, wishing Asar the best possible recovery. And we also heard that Isaiah Stewart is going to be out for the rest of the season with a strained hamstring. That's not a very severe injury. I think it's just kind of a matter of no reason to rush him back. And also, draft positioning does matter. Hate to put it that way, but draft positioning, again, does matter. Pistons are right at the bottom with the Wizards. And yeah, the Pistons were the worst team in the league last season. And they got pick five. They were the second to worst team in the league 2 seasons ago. And they got pick five. It doesn't guarantee you, obviously, like a higher pick being the worst team in the league, but it means that you can't fall further. It would have been worse for the Pistons if they'd fallen to six last season, for example. So at least insulates you against an even worse outcome. You know, being 30th at this point with the season pretty much definitively lost, the Pistons, well, the season's been definitively lost for a while, but at this point, I mean, the Pistons can't even realistically hope to, like, end the season strong or anything like that, and we'll see what happens in the offseason. There'll be plenty of time to talk about that and how many of these players should stick around from a team that has done so poorly, but there's something I want to yet again put a caveat on that. Yes, this team has been incredibly bad this season. It reached a low never achieved before by any team in the history of the league in 28 straight losses, and it did so while it was trying to win, which is nearly inconceivable. And yeah, it's probably going to finish the worst win total in the history of the Detroit Pistons organization, which I believe 16 is the worst right now. So one worse than the Pistons managed last season. Of course, they hard tanked the last quarter of last season. You guys all remember, I'm sure, the James Wiseman, Marvin Bagley lineups, and Wiseman and Killian for the last like 6 weeks were the second and third leading scorers for the Pistons. Should tell you about how awful that roster was. But yeah, it's entirely possible the Pistons will end the season with only 15 wins. Who knows? They play some bad teams, but they're going to want to lose. You know, they're going to want to lose those games. Who knows how low they'll go in an effort to lose those games. But at this point, I mean, you need every bit of help you can get. But I digress. Basically, I don't think you can make an evaluation of this roster and just say, look at this roster. It lost 28 straight games, and it is going to finish with very few wins. It's just a disaster. It did worse than the last season's roster. I think this should be contextualized by last season's roster. Dwayne Casey, you know, I've said I'm not going to talk about him at length. I'll just say I think that he was a very below average on-court coach, great locker room guy. Players liked him, good for development by most indications. I don't think he was great for it and how he used his players in the court, but seemed to be pretty good at it. And took a roster last season that was significantly worse than this season's roster and coached it to 17 wins despite that last six-week hard tank. And of course, 17 wins is not a successful season by any means. Pistons were the worst team in the league. But then you have Monty Williams, the Grim Reaper of NBA coaches, who has taken a significantly better roster and done drastically worse things with it. Don't get me wrong, this roster is inadequate. You've heard me talk about it quite a bit, how the front office did a very poor job of building this roster. But this is not a historically bad roster. This is just an inadequate roster that I think could have been coached to 25 to 30 wins by a competent coach or by a good coach. Yeah, maybe you get a genuinely good coach. I don't think 30 wins would have been outside the realm of possibility. Unfortunately, you have one of the worst coaches the NBA has seen in decades. A guy who, you know, by all reasonable standards, an NBA coach should not be able to be this bad at his job. It has been a complete disaster. So, yeah, the roster has issues, no doubt about it. Weaver and company have done a poor job. I mean, there's definitely been some serious mismanagement there. But this is just like an inadequate roster. This is not a horrifically bad roster. This is an inadequate roster, which unfortunately, thanks to the owner, whom, by the way, I'm feeling increasingly sure really promised Monty Williams as a condition of getting him to be coach here, in addition to the enormous bags of guaranteed money he gave the guy, that he would have tremendous latitude and possibly freedom from the front office in terms of how he wanted to coach, because I think that the prospect of this front office or any front office which is trying to win standing by and doing nothing while the coach malpractices his way to 28 straight losses. Under normal circumstances, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think that somebody is going to intervene and say, you are doing things that are genuinely insane and you have to stop doing it right now. And the average front office does have that latitude. And I've kind of revisited what we heard, like the language around, even the stuff around Ivy, which seems to be the only capacity in which the front office has actually been able to modify what Monty Williams is doing, short of just getting rid of the players he likes who are terrible, like Isaiah Livers or Killian Hayes. And we heard shortly after Jaden Ivey abruptly overnight ended up back in the starting lineup after being in Monty's doghouse for the entire season up to that point. We saw in that completely incoherent press conference that Tom Gore has held, he mentioned he's been talking to Monty about rotations. Okay, maybe that was, you know, just a, maybe that wasn't true and he just wanted to give lip service, but possible it is true. If that is true, then probably it was Gores who did that. Then we heard later on the big organizational meeting, as it had, you know, at which it was pointed out, quote unquote, that Monty had not been using Ivy as a handler, and which Monty played dumb and said, oh, you know, that's on me. I guess I just didn't think of it. Yeah, which should have been and probably was believed by nobody. Entirely possible that Tom Gores was at that big organizational meeting. So I would not be surprised at all if Tom, who is a huge problem for this team, who is just, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, or I mean, I would imagine some of you disagree with me about this, but I feel pretty strongly about it. So we'll put it that way, that Tom at this point, I think, is the worst owner in the NBA, free and clear, and one of the worst owners in North American professional sports. He hires incompetent personnel. He maintains cronies in positions of power. And he cannot keep his diseased fingers out of team operations, even though whenever he has intervened, it has almost invariably come to harm. And I think, I'll reiterate, I think the guy really wants to see the team succeed, and he's willing to pay whatever it takes. Unfortunately, there's this deadly caveat of, I want to see the team succeed, but only if I can involve myself in that success. It doesn't work that way. He's been absolutely horrible at his job. I mean, he's been absolutely terrible as a team owner. You know, give the guy credit again. He will spend whatever it takes, and he's clearly very enthusiastic. Went out and bought a G League team, you know, and built that big performance center. And, you know, I think if the Pistons were a good team, he'd spend into the luxury tax quite a bit. Unfortunately, he is just incredibly incompetent in how, whatever. I mean, let's remember that this is the guy who took 9 seasons to okay a rebuild even in the first place. It's just a nightmare. So, just going back to the original point, though, yeah, this season has been terrible, without a doubt. For me, it's been the worst sports season I've ever sat through. I don't want to say sat through. I mean, that's not really, I mean, I guess that's what all of us are doing, assuming that we're not getting up and running around during games. But, yeah, it's the worst sports season I've ever experienced, like, by a long shot. I've mentioned 2016, 2017 as being my previous low in terms of just frustration in sports seasons. And, you know what, at least the Pistons had a solid first 20 games in that season. You know, there was that at least before the frustration began, and Van Gundy was bad, but not this bad. And my goodness, this season has just been a colossal and just absolutely awful. It's been so hard. I'm sure as hard for many of you as it has been for me. And if you're still watching at this stage of the season, you know, particularly after the, you know, the news we got today, then kudos to you. You're a very loyal fan. In my opinion, very, very difficult to find joy in this team right now and joy in this organization. But, you know, that's just how it is sometimes. And I suppose we all do our best to soldier through the difficult times so we can enjoy the good times. So, yes, to finally circle back, yeah, the roster has issues. There's no doubt about that. You know, it is inadequate in many areas. The youth are arguably mismatched. And there are a lot of issues with the roster. But I think that, again, with a good coach, I think you're looking at 25 to 30 wins this season, and that's probably still quite disappointing by comparison to the other teams, you know, the other three of the bad four, so to speak, between the Pistons were in the upper echelons in the 2021 draft, and be Orlando and Oklahoma City and Houston, and that's actually going to be the subject of this episode, is comparing those rebuilds. So it would be disappointing, perhaps, in the context of those teams, you know, especially with Houston really surging at this point. They've won 6 in a row and 8 of their last 10. Now, granted, they have, they've been without Şengün in the last 4, and they played 3 really bad teams, the Spurs and then the Wizards twice, but they did win all 4. So in any event, It would be disappointing relative to that, especially if it were closer to 25 rather than 30. It would be still progress. 30 would be significant progress. But what the Pistons ultimately got was just an unprecedented display of a coach being just mind-bogglingly dumbfoundingly destructive to the team he was coaching. Like, unprecedented. And so, yeah, it's been a horrible season. I think that should be kept in mind when we look at the roster as a whole in terms of how it's going to look going forward. Though, of course, Monty Williams, unless he decides, you know, it's possible that the guy just suffered severe cognitive decline in the offseason, but I doubt it. So I think it's a matter of deciding for him that he actually wants to coach the right way or something, or the book being slammed on him if Tom Gorez did offer him that absolute latitude, though I'm not sure. I think it might take several more years yet before Mr. Gorez is actually going to admit to himself that the Monty hire was a big mistake. But yeah, if we got this season's Monty Williams next season, then this is the hardest thing for me. It's been one of the hardest things for me this season, just in general, just like it was with Van Gundy in his final two seasons, just knowing that every game I'm going to tune in and watch the coach completely undercut his team in ways that are incredibly obvious and incredibly easily avoidable. So that was hard with Van Gundy in those seasons. It's been incredibly hard for me and with Monty in this season. And the hardest thing for me going forward is not where the roster stands. Honestly, though, that's an issue. That's a big issue. The hardest thing for me is knowing that Monty may be around next season to continue destroying his team's performance in the way that he did this season. And I can't imagine that what he did this season and the lows he took this team to did not have some sort of deleterious impact on developments, because just imagine being a young player and going through this. So that's what makes for me optimism about this the most difficult, both in terms of what I think the team may be able to accomplish and just my own enjoyment watching the games. And it's just, you know, with Monty at the helm, I mean, even exclusive of me, I mean, nothing in sports tilts me like bad coaching. Nothing in sports bothers me like that. And the Pistons have gotten some of the worst of it. I've actually the worst NBA coaching I've ever seen. But just in terms of if they get this Monty again, what's realistically going to be possible next season? Who knows? All we can do is hope for the best. I'm not trying to be Mr. Doom and Gloom here. It's just something that's on my mind. But yeah, that was just my point in general. Just when it comes to thinking about the roster, there's got to consider other factors, or I think the primary factor in why this season was a complete and utter grueling, abject disaster rather than just maybe a little bit disappointing, and why the roster looked as bad as it did rather than just very inadequate. It's not super hard to win 25 to 30 games in the NBA with a pretty inadequate roster if you're trying. It's just you don't see many teams in that range these days, because they'd rather be, you know, if they're rebuilding, they'd rather be bad. And if they're trying, they're likely to be better than 25 to 30 wins. All right, so let's move on to the subject of the episode. And a listener submitted this some months ago, but at the time I thought it was, I just wanted to be able to dedicate an entire episode to it. It actually took quite a bit of research. Not difficult research, but research getting this all down. So I was asked to do a comparison of the rebuilds between the Pistons, the Rockets, the Thunder, and the Magic. And these were really the bad four, so to speak, like the super rebuilders, right around where the rebuild began for the Pistons. And for the Pistons, really, it began, I mean, they began earlier, it began for them right around the end of 2019. And that was really signaled by the willingness to trade Drummond, ultimately traded for peanuts just to get him off the books and presumably off the roster. Whatever, I'm not going to get into that. I'll stick to my promise here and not talk about Drummond. So, and honestly, I don't like talking about Drummond. Sometimes I just like weighing into the guy because I still have kind of like residual irritation and resentment for how he played with the Pistons. But, you know, that's long past. Though, contrary to what I said in the last episode, I mean, watching Jalen Duren against the Heat last week, which I think was the day after I posted that episode, my goodness, that looked bad. He seemingly could not have cared less about defense in that game. Oh boy. Does guidance, you know, from his coach have anything to do with that? Or lack of accountability, because there is no accountability unless your name is Jaden Ivey and the coach dislikes you? We'll see. You know, when it came to the other guy, Van Gundy treating him like a king certainly didn't help things, I would imagine. Okay. So yeah, when it came to the 2021 draft and then the year after that, these were really the bottom four teams, aside from Toronto. Toronto was there in 2021, but that was kind of a fluke. They had made the conference finals the season before. They would make the conference semifinals the season after. They just spent that 1 year in the middle at the bottom because of injuries and ended up with the fourth overall pick. They jumped in the lottery, I think, from number eight, whatever. They jumped in the lottery and ended up taking Scotty Barnes at the number four. And my goodness, who am I forgetting? Yeah, the Cavaliers were down there too, but they really didn't spend very long down there. They were out of there by 2022. So these have been the rebuilders. The Thunder, of course, are really in really good shape this season. But yeah, these were the teams who were roughly where the Pistons were in 2021. So going to go over a variety of factors here. I'm going to talk starting assets first. Of course, that's going to make a difference in terms of how the rebuild is going to start. It's good to start with more juice, obviously, more players to trade, more assets to parlay. Lottery luck, of course, is a thing too. That's not in anybody's control. Drafting, obviously, going to be a big thing. Overall management outside of drafting, that's going to be a big thing. The personnel whom they've hired and developments, and then finally where they stand right now. And I was going to do like this is like a total grade out of, you know, 25 or 20 or 30, or just a bunch of ones out of fives, and excuse me, one to five out of fives. And but that was going to get a little complicated. How was I going to put starting assets in there? Because that's of course going to inform a lot more. So I'll just start with the Pistons just to contextualize things. So let's talk starting assets here just for overall context. And overall context should also include, you know, what the teams did the season before. Thunder made the playoffs, Rockets made the playoffs, Magic made the playoffs, and the Pistons, of course, did not. But making the playoffs doesn't necessarily set you up better. Well, actually, the Pistons did where they didn't get a head start was in having assets to parlay. And if you're a playoff team, you generally have assets you can trade away. Where the Pistons did start out better is that they were the only one of these teams with a top 10 pick. The Rockets didn't go into the draft with any pick. The Magic, I believe, had number 15. The Thunder had to trade up to get number 17. And the Pistons, of course, owned number 7, which they used to select a superstar whose name, you know, I was going to joke about Tyrese Halliburton there. Okay, so starting assets. For the Pistons definitely started off the worst out of the four of them. No extra future first, and we're talking, you know, before the draft here. No extra future first. They did own all their first-round picks. And I'm not going to get into second-round picks in this evaluation. That would have taken me like a day to research where all these second-round picks went in terms of trades and who had what. They get traded around like candy. So just in terms of firsts and players, the Pistons had all their future firsts. They did not have any extra future firsts. They really had basically nobody on the roster who was going to get a significant return. And yeah, so that's where they stood. I mean, they had guys they traded away like Bruce Brown, for example, or like, Derrick Rose, and like Luke Kennard was the most tradable asset in the team. So we'll include him as basically the player, the only guy with value. And then we'll move up the scale here. The Magic also owned all their picks, did not have any future firsts, did not owe any future firsts. They did have Nikola Vucevic, which would turn out to be a pretty darn big deal for them. He was a player who I think had made, I don't remember if he made the All-Star game the season before, but he did in 2018-2019. And then moving up, the Rockets. So this is actually going to alter the rules a little bit because they actually started off the season wanting to win, which does change things a little bit. They changed course once Harden decided that he wanted out because that really kicked them into a rebuild. There was really very little choice in the matter. Everything revolved around Harden, like everything. And they actually started off with negative assets thanks to the Westbrook trade. So they had traded away in exchange for Westbrook in 2019, a 2021 pick swap, which they got very, very lucky with because they could have ended up without a pick if they'd had the Pistons lottery luck. Because they had a 52% chance of getting number 5, and if they got number 5, it would have gone to the Thunder. And they owe a 2024 top 4 protected pick to the Thunder. They owe a 2025 top 10 protected pick swap and a 2026 top 4 protected first. This is why they went and spent in free agency this season, in part because they had to get to the salary floor. You have to get to the salary floor if you want to get luxury tax revenue sharing, but also because they had absolutely nothing to gain by not being, you know, by tanking this season. Basically, their best case scenario would have seen them be the worst team in the league and have a less than 50% chance of keeping their pick. So they had no first in 2020, again, and that was due to that huge four-way trade that February that left the Rockets with the apotheosis of small ball, Robert Covington playing center, which worked kind of fine in the first round, and then they ran into Anthony Davis in round two, and it didn't go quite so well. They did get a first in 2020 by trading Robert Covington. That ultimately went to the Pistons. But from the Tardon trade, they got first in 2024 and 2026, and swaps in 2023, 2025, and 2027. But if we're talking future assets, they haven't traded either of those away. So in any case, yeah, the Covington trade, also a 2023 first from Portland. Basically, the Rockets are kind of like an interesting situation because they started off in the hole, and then they didn't have those. They basically could not trade a pick between 2023 and 2028, not their own pick, which is an issue. They ended up getting a bunch of picks in exchange for Harden, and those picks are actually going to be, and I mean, those will have an implication on the Rockets being able to trade. Well, actually, no. It just means in terms of the stepping role in 2023, and well, which has already happened, which is now irrelevant. But the stepping role, they'd be allowed to trade their own pick in 2027 because they'd have one from the Nets that's unprotected. So they started off in the hole in assets. Very soon, kind of got themselves back on track. So yeah, it's that one's kind of a little bit more difficult. They were kind of neutral, and then we have Oklahoma City, who started off the 2020 draft with 17 first round picks. Sam Presti did an amazing job in terms of getting assets for Westbrook and for Paul George. That enormous haul of assets he got from the Clippers for Paul George, you know, just the package he got in exchange for Westbrook was very substantial. And part of that was Chris Paul, whom he then flipped to the Suns after one season in which, you know, he played next to SGA. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who of course is a top 10 player in the league now, and who also came over in the Clippers trade. That was just an excellent trade for the Thunder. It was kind of you'd call it a win-win if the Clippers had been able to actually do anything, but they haven't. But yeah, between Westbrook, George, Chris Paul, and even Dennis Schroeder, who I believe got them a first. Yeah, they went in with 17 first-round picks, counting their own, and those that had been traded to them between 2020 and 2026. So he just did an excellent job there. And in terms of roster players, Shai, of course, who's still there, and Dort, who's also still there. So didn't really go about trading roster players aside from those four. Schroeder, I believe, I don't remember if that was in 2020 or not. So in any case, this is just all to say that the Pistons and the Rockets kind of started off roughly equal, except, oh yeah, I should mention this. They didn't start off equal. The Pistons started off the worst because the Rockets actually did have some players they could trade. They did trade Covington, and that got them a pick from the Pistons. That infamous pick, which basically has tied up everything for the Pistons in terms of first-round picks and trading them until 2029. And Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker, whom I almost just called Darcy Tucker, who used to play hockey a while back, notably for the Maple Leafs. Not a very nice guy. That ultimately, those guys went through two trades and got Houston a pick 20 in 2023, which turned into Cam Whitmore. So the Rockets started out a little bit ahead of the Pistons. The Magic started out a little bit ahead of the Pistons just because they had Vucevic. And the Thunder, of course, who are now in the best position, started off with far more than everybody else. They really haven't done a ton with those first-round picks. They really need to find a way to leverage those. They've already kicked the can down the road once by trading one away to Denver for something in the far future. So that just deserves to be said. The Pistons did start off the worst. They also had the Blake Griffin contract to contend with. The Rockets had John Wall. So there were comparables there because they would ultimately trade away Westbrook before that season for a heavily protected 2023 first, which actually ended up doing some good things for him. So let's talk draft. And it's worth mentioning lottery luck. The Rockets came out a little bit ahead of the other teams because the Rockets ended up with number two in 2021 and number three in 2022. And then number four in 2023. Whereas the Pistons ended up with 1, 5, and 5. The Thunder fell to 6 in 2021. They did jump to 2 in 2022. And then the Magic, of course, the Magic had number 5, then number 1, number 6. So the Rockets were out a little bit ahead. Pistons could have used a little bit more luck, but just in terms of comparables, it really hasn't been all that different between the four teams. All right, so from there, we can talk personnel first. You know, this is obviously an important one. You look at the Thunder, Alain Danielle, a good coach. Like, they run a good system. It's very clean. It's not perfect, but it's good. I think Danielle is a top 10 coach. The Rockets started off by hiring Steven Silas, who was terrible. Has now been terrible with multiple teams. Ran a horrible locker room with the Rockets. Players really didn't like him. Who knows? It was horrible, but the players definitely didn't like him. And he was just a complete mess in terms of as an X, as an O's coach. And so, of course, Monty Williams hired him to be an assistant for the Pistons this season, which was, even though some assistants are good as assistants and bad as head coaches, I think Silas has such a bad history as an assistant and a head coach that it was completely dumbfounding hire. But then they ended up with Udoka, who's solid, you know, maybe above average. The Magic, after year one, hired Jamal Mosley, who is a genuinely good coach. Pistons ran with Casey for the first three seasons. They were the only team to maintain a coach for more than one season after, you know, from 2020 on. And we all know Dwayne Casey, you know, good locker room guy, solid development guy, but a pretty bad on-court coach. And then, of course, this season hired arguably the worst coach seen in the NBA in decades, who was competent, if very limited, and did horribly in the playoffs, you know, just one season ago, and still inexplicably devolved into a complete and utter catastrophe. Okay. All right, so basically, we know where they started. We just talked a little bit about the personnel. It's going to come down here to drafting and to, you know, what they do by, you know, what they have done by way of facility and management, you know, largely trades and free agency. So drafting is obviously a good place to start. So we'll start with the Pistons. We talked about this plenty, so I'll summarize this. The 2020 draft, a lot of chips got pushed in. The Pistons traded that pick to Houston, which we'll talk about next, what Houston did with it. In exchange for Stewart, they had number 7. They traded Luke Kennard alongside 4 second-round draft picks because of concerns that the Clippers had over his health, for pick 19, which they took to select Sadiq Bey. And they took on Tony Bradley from the Jazz as a cap dump in exchange for a pick in the 40s somewhere for Sabin Lee. This draft was horrible. We all know it. Don't really need to talk too much about it. Killian was an enormous bust. Sadiq turned from kind of promising, very mature leader, you know, solid three-point, you know, good three-point shooter, and, you know, solid enough defender, wise beyond his years, and just into disaster on defense and selfish player in year 3, and then went on to replicate that in year 4 before tearing his ACL, which for a player who's got his pretty poor athleticism in the first place may end his career. And Sabin Lee, you know, second-round picks, you don't care as much if they bust, but he definitely busted. I think he had a good game for the Suns recently, but on the whole, he's been pretty bad for them too. This is what happens when you're not really explosive. You're more just quick, but you're not quick enough really to get past guys and score into, and you can't jump that high, so you're just quick, and you're scoring below the rim, and Tyrese Maxey can do it, but you're not as quick as he is, and you can't shoot threes, and you're not a particularly good playmaker. So that draft was a flop. Now, the Pistons expended pick number 7, that future first, which is really going to lock down flexibility, for what it's worth, because the Pistons shouldn't be trading future first anyway, but nonetheless. And then Kennard, who was basically their only roster player with value, and 4 second-round picks, 3 of which belong to the Pistons, and was certainly not without value, given that the Pistons have fallen in the standings. And then some cap space, you know, which you want to use, of course, to take on assets, though obviously that's gotten a bad name in the last, well, since last offseason. And all of that in what was a draft which turned out to have some good talent, some pretty darn good talent, which the Pistons had access to, and sometimes had access to 3 times. And what you get out of it is a bench big, whom the front office this season chooses to miscast as a power forward, and hopefully that is over and done with. So that draft was a flop. 2021, you get picked number 1, I think the only realistic pick there, especially for a team that's looking for a lead handler, is Cade Cunningham. And then you have 42. You have, I think, 52 and 57. 42, you choose to risk it on an unathletic and persistently injured player who's not even going to be healthy until like 4 months into the next season, longer, actually. I think it would ultimately be like 5 months And I guess you're hoping that even though he had a serious injury in years 3 and 4 and was going to be coming into the league at 23 years old and was not a good NBA athlete and was only going to really be able to succeed as, your ceiling and that kind of guy is like an eighth man. And if you get that, in the second round, then that's fine. But hoping that a player like that is relying to any degree upon the notion that he might ever be healthy, consistently healthy after that is questionable. And then Luka Garza, who had no NBA upside. I think he's had a few decent games recently for the Timberwolves, but that guy is always going to be a massive defensive liability, of course, is forever unplayable in the postseason. There's no question about that. And then instead of drafting Jericho Sims, who would have been an athletic big at least, and the Pistons needed an athletic big, and ultimately would have no athletic bigs that season until February, they drafted Balsa Koprivica, which didn't make any sense to anybody because he had not even the slightest bit of NBA upside. They ultimately, strangely enough, traded him for cash to the Clippers. I'm not sure why the Clippers paid 7 figures for him, but whatever. Not my money. 2022, you had Ivy. Really, the choice here was between Ivy and Mathurin, and that's still up for debate. Of course, Jalen Williams turned out to be much better, but nobody saw that coming. You had Duren, who I think was a good swing at that point, continues to have a lot of potential, though there are some leaks definitely sprung this season. And then Gabriel Procida. And this was a case of the Pistons kind of letting the tail wag the dog, just the desire to not have another standard NBA contract and a young player, not being able to trade it and saying, okay, well, we're just going to draft a guy with a passport, so we don't have to worry about that. That's pretty lazy. And then, of course, in 2023, you have Assar at number 5, and you have Sasser, whom they traded up to select near the end of the first round. So you look at drafting overall. So 2020 ended up being kind of like a watershed moment, unfortunately, for the rebuild, where Weaver and company, and again, it's so hard to know how much power Arne Tellemann and Ed Stefanski have in this process. They both technically outrank Weaver, and we've seen that they're involved in drafting, and who knows? So I don't like to just say Weaver. I'm just going with the front office here. But whoever was in charge had a great chance to get a head start on the rebuild by getting some good talent and completely blew it. I mean, this was like a D-plus draft. A D-plus draft in that they had got something out of it, but the only something they got out of it was a bench big. And it's both the missed opportunities and the fact that they expended assets and the fact that you have 3 picks in the top 20 and all you get is a role player. Especially you waste... Also, you have pick number 7 where you've just absolutely made the wrong decision. You call Desmond Bain and you tell him you might draft him at 16. You don't draft him at 16. You don't draft him at 19. And you look at this, and I keep coming back to the fact that, sure, you see that a lot of teams missed out on a lot of players, or on players who were drafted after them, and that's always the case, that a lot of teams will miss out on guys who turn out to be very good. But if you want to be a good general manager, you have to not be those guys. You have to be the guy who swoops in and finds the talent that others don't see. It's not okay to just say, well, I screwed this up as much as everybody else did. You know, like I missed the boat, like a lot of other general managers. If you want to build a contender, you can't do that. But Weaver did not only miss the boat, but Weaver, the front office, they sucked in that draft. 2021, I mean, if the Pistons had fallen in this draft and gotten like pick number 6, we'd be saying now very, very bad things probably about this rebuild. Who knows what would have happened in the next 2 seasons. I mean, even worse things about this rebuild, but whatever, they got number 1. I think Cabe was the reasonable choice there. I think still think he's the right choice. He was also basically the consensus choice. Weavers, I think, was a questionable pick, but it's a second-round pick. Garza and Koprivica, even by the standards of picks in the 50s, were completely bizarre and didn't make any sense. So you'll give Weaver, or front office, excuse me, like a solid C in that draft because they were always going to take Cade. I think that was going to be the decision, period. And their picks after that just did not work out. I'm not even giving them the C-minus because it just didn't really make a ton of sense in terms of their other 3 picks. 2022... I mean, I think this is a solid B-plus draft for them. You know, they managed to get that second pick. They took Duren, who I think if he can just get his defense together, could be a very, very good player. I still think that Ivy has a lot of potential. It was down to here, Mathurin. Sharp, I don't blame them for not taking Sharp because there was just no data. Jury's out on Sharp, too. He started strong this season and then completely fell flat in his face and has been injured for most of the season. The injury didn't come from falling flat in his face. I mean, I meant that metaphorically, that he was very bad for about, I think, 20 games before his injury. He played 30-something. He was strong at first and then did very badly thereafter. So yeah, just the possibility that they may have found, you know, a pretty darn good player in the middle of the first round with the pick that they acquired from the Knicks, I think was admirable. I think Ivy still has a lot of potential. And 2023, I know this is a little bit controversial because ultimately the Pistons really adding a complete non-shooter. I mean, that's a risk, but also adding a complete non-shooter when the rest of your youth are, you know, your core youth, you don't really have shooting there either, and your team is short on elite shooting. The trouble in 2023 is that, like, there weren't really guys who were reasonable sort of either really high floor or high ceiling with just a reasonably high ceiling with elite shooting, unless you wanted to go with Taylor Hendricks, who, in my opinion, was just that the ceiling wasn't there. It was just a tough draft in terms of kind of more game ready but still very talented players, and in terms of trade down opportunities. I mean, who knows what they could have gotten by way of roster player, but once you hit number five, I mean, they could have gone with Cam Whitmore. The jury is out. I mean, the guy, one thing that's true about the guy, I mean, he's doing well as a scorer, but one thing is true about the guy is that he's a horrendous passer. Last I looked, he was at the bottom of the league in terms of assists per possession. But there were also the questions about his workouts and about his health. I don't think it really would have been responsible in light of those take him at number five. So, and Sasser, I've gone back and forth about him because Sasser, at some points this season, has looked like, okay, this guy could actually be a pretty good backup point guard. And, you know, just a guy who can make tough shots and just use that gravity to allow him to make plays for his teammates. And then there are other times at which it's like, man, this guy has to be on the floor with another creator because he just can't do it himself. And in that situation, it's like, well, he can't really be your backup point guard in that case. He's not going to be able to lead an offense. You always want more than one creator on the floor at a time. But if this guy is kind of helpless as a creator, which he is when he's not hitting tough shots, because if he's not hitting tough shots, he's not attracting that gravity. If he's not hitting tough shots, he's also just not doing much on offense because he's not going to beat anybody off the dribble. So, and if he can't be a backup point guard, then he's an undersized shooting specialist who has to be on the floor with a larger, you know, with a larger handler. So this draft, I'll just give a solid average. I think Asar was the only reasonable pick, unless you think Jairus Walker was it, and I don't think he is. So I'll just give it a flat average. So basically what it comes down to is one horrible draft, like genuinely horrible draft, two very, very average drafts, you know, and I'd say 2021 average at best, because, you know, it just bugs me. The fact that the Garza and the Balsa picks made absolutely no sense. I don't care if they're in the 50s. Sometimes you get good picks in the 50s. Aaron Wiggins for the Thunder is giving them good minutes. So, and then you have one pretty good draft. And the hallmark of that pretty good draft was just Jalen Duren, on whom the jury is still out. So, I mean, I'll downgrade that one to like a B, especially because the jury is still out on Ivy, who has struggled. Mathurin hasn't really been great, but he's been better than Ivy. So you've got one slightly above average, you know, above average draft. You got two average drafts, and you have got one really bad draft. That gets you to like a 2 out of 5 on the drafting scale. It has not gone well yet. Things will look up if Ivy and Duren really come through, but man, does that 2020 draft hurt. That was a disaster. So I spent a while on the Pistons here. I'll spend a little bit less time on the other teams. So the Magic, Cole Anthony in 2020. Again, they made the playoffs the season before. So Anthony, whatever, mid-first round pick, really hasn't panned out as they would have liked. Did miss out on some guys behind him, like Tyrese Maxey, for example. Anthony was an interesting choice because there was the real questions are, you know, can he lead an offense? And the answer turned out to be no. He's just kind of a heat check guy off the bench who doesn't really play very good defense and isn't reliable from three. But with the 15th pick, I mean, it's not a disaster if you just miss once on a pick, you know, right out on the edge of the lottery. 2021, with Barnes being taken number four, they took Suggs. He was really the only pick that made sense at the time. Doesn't look like he's going to be a guy who can lead an offense, but he looks like he's going to be a pretty darn good 3-and-D guard. Franz Wagner was a huge hit in 2021. Huge. Nobody expected him. You know, maybe the Magic did, but I don't think anybody beyond the Magic, even if they did, you know, assuming that they did, rather expected that Wagner would be this good. And, I mean, he's having a down year from three, but is still a very good player. I mean, Wagner is a very good two-way player. And then in 2022, Banchero, it was really unclear who was going to be the number one overall pick. I think the odds were still on Jabari Smith Jr. as late as draft day until I think something got leaked on draft day. But, excuse me, sorry, I have the sniffles again. So Banchero, I think for me, it would have been a risky pick for the Pistons. But I mean, I think they made the right decision taking him over Jabari Smith Jr. I still have my doubts about Banchero. I mean, he's definitely improved his three-point shooter this season, which was always going to be necessary. I still have my doubts in terms of, is this guy really, I mean, a guy whom you're really going to want to play around a lot? He's managed to get to the rim better than I expected to, despite the very meh first step and the fact that he was very ISO-based in college. He's done a lot better than I expected in terms of attacking in the interior, though he's not nearly as ISO-based as he was back then. But is this really going to be a guy who's good enough to play around? And you have to play around Banchero. But nonetheless, made the right choice there. Caleb Houston, could be a decent pick at 32. Who knows at this point? 2023, of course, is way too early to call with Anthony Black and Jet Howard. But all told, you know, I'd give them a 4 out of 5 in terms of drafting. Just hitting on Franz Wagner, that was a huge pick. And choosing Banchero over Jabari Smith Jr., I think, was the way to go. Over Chet, who knows, but they really did need that kind of lead handler sort of guy, and Banchero is going to do that for them. So they've done well, and that is Jeff Weltman, I believe is his name. We move on to the Rockets with Raphael Stone. Yes, 2020 they had nothing. They picked Kenyon Martin Jr. at 52, and I think Kenyon Martin Jr., am I getting his name right? Whatever, he's gone on to do nothing for them. 2021, Jalen Green at number 2. You could make the argument that they should have gone with Evan Mobley. The jury is very much still out on Jalen Green because he's had a rough time this season for the most part. He's really picked it up lately. Where they really hit it in 2021, they traded for the pick that became Alperen, I don't want to pronounce his first name, Alperen Şengün, who I think is already at this point a top 10 center. I have my doubts about his ability to display switch defense in the playoffs. They'd have to protect him there. But speaking in terms of offense, I mean, the guy is verging on Domantas Sabonis at this point, and Sabonis is a pretty darn good player on offense. I've seen it asked, oh, is he, you know, can he be Jokic? Nobody's going to be Jokic possibly for the remainder of the history of the NBA. Excuse me, the remainder of the future of the NBA until the sun burns out. You might not see another Jokic. Like, in terms of centers who can score in the interior and are strong playmakers, you've got Şengün is already up there with Sabonis. And then you have a gigantic gap between Sabonis and Jokic. Jokic is, in terms of, as a center on offense, he may be the most talented of all time. And as in terms of his skill set, he might be greater than generational. But nonetheless, Şengün was still very good, has drastically outperformed his draft position. The rest of the draft, which was picks they acquired from, one from Portland, I don't remember where the other two came from, but Garuba, Christopher, and Ty Washington, who were picked in the mid to late 20s and went nowhere, which really isn't kind of what you want. You'd really like to get at least a little bit of something out of the three of them, and they got nothing. 2022, I mean, they went number 3. They were going to take whoever was left between Jabari Smith Jr. and Chet and Banchero, and they got Jabari Smith Jr. Can't blame them for that. I think that, you know, with Jalen Green on the team in particular, you weren't going to take Mathurin or Ivy. So I think Jabari Smith Jr. is... No, he's gotten some very strange usage. I thought he'd get more usage this season as a shot creator, but he really hasn't. And his three-point shooting really hasn't been as good as I expected either. But he's always going to be a strong rotation player, I think. A guy who is pretty good from three and plays strong defense. But he was also just the only pick that anybody was going to reasonably make at that point. Tari Eason, this is, I believe, one of the Nets picks. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. He was drafted 17. I think he's going to be a solid rotation player in the NBA. He's highly athletic. You know, he's a solid shooter. He's solid again in the basket. Still sucks as a passer. But at 17, I think that's a good pick. And 2023, again, comes down to Amen really being the only reasonable choice. They do need a franchise handler. You're worried about his shooting. I think he was the only reasonable choice at this point. I think it was a risk worth taking. And Whitmore, if he works out at number 20, they took that risk. That's going to be a good pick. So again, I give them a 4 out of 5, same as the Magic. The Şengün pick really puts it up there. And, you know, you'd like to see them do better with those picks in the 20s in 2021. But all told, yeah, you get Şengün there. You get Eason at 17, possibly Whitmore at 20. Pretty good. And then we come to the Thunder, who are the team who needed to draft well the least, but may have done the best. Pokuševski in 2020 was a bust. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And they did trade away picks that ended up being Quickly and Jaden McDaniels. But, it's anybody's guess as to whether they were going to pick those guys anyway. 2021, Giddey number 6. I don't think anybody expected him to go quite that high. He's been decent. Still needs to work on his shot. but he's been a good pick. Trey Mann, jury's out. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl is off the team. And Aaron Wiggins, who, as mentioned, was picked in the 50s, has actually given them some good minutes and maybe on the team in the long term. 2022, they could have gone with Jabari Smith Jr. They ended up taking Chet Holmgren, who has looked very good this season. He might not win Rookie of the Year because Wemby has just been so impressive, but he's been very good nonetheless. Jalen Williams was the really big hit here. At number 12, Williams could have gone anywhere from the middle of the first to the end of the first. I mean, he was a guy who had solid fundamentals and a solid all-around game, but very meh athleticism and wasn't judged to have high-level talents. Came in and was second Rookie of the Year as a 20-point-per-game scorer this season. And, I mean, that's a huge win. It's not quite the sort of win that that a Şengün is, I think, or Franz Wagner, but that was a very good pick. And then Jalen Williams, the other Jalen Williams. Yeah, that was a funny situation. It was picked at 34, and yeah, the jury's still out. Kasem Wallace, interesting pick because the Thunder are already pretty deep at guard, and the jury's out there. So I'd still give them a solid 4 out of 5 for, you know, I think Giddey was a decent pick and what turned out to be a not as strong as expected top 10 in 2021. Picking Chet or Jabari Smith, I think, was the right call. I still have my doubts about his ability to remain healthy at that size and to not get bullied, but, you know, we'll see. I think he was the right pick over JSJ. And then Jalen Williams was just such a win for them. So I'd say you got 4 out of 5 grades there for these other teams. And the Pistons, who are really yet to pull out a player who's like, okay, well, we really went out and got a win and had, and our other drafts were decent. And again, bear in mind, the Pistons were ahead by one draft. You know, they had 4 drafts in which they were picking high versus 3 for these other, 3 for these other teams. Rockets didn't even have a 2020 first round pick. The Magic were at 15, the Thunder were at 17. So those teams have done better work in 3 drafts than the Pistons have done in 4. Significantly better. And give those other teams, you know, 4 out of 5 grades. And the Pistons probably a 2. And then let's look at management here. I hope this isn't getting too convoluted, but we look first at Troy Weaver. Now, I'd say the best thing that Weaver did came at the very beginning, and he caught a lot of shade for this, and it turned out to be a really good idea, which was signing Jeremy Grant to a 3-year, $60 million deal. Grant was a role player before this. Everybody thought Weaver was crazy. Turned out to be a guy who was a real stabilizer those first 2 seasons. Turned into a much better creator than anybody expected. And you could get the ball to him and expect him to do a decent job of getting a bucket. He was strong on defense. He was reliable from the perimeter. He was ironically exactly the sort of guy that this season's team could have used, or even last season's team. So that was a win. Plumlee was, you know, whatever. I mean, the Pistons lost some dead cap space, and for the sake of, I mean, it was kind of funny that Josh Smith cap hit came off the books just at the same time as the Pistons got the dead cap hit of Zaire Smith and Dwayne Dedman at the same time. So in any case, yeah, those were intended to get, you know, all that cap dumping was intended to get Jeremy Grant and Mason Plumlee on the team. And Plumlee did his job. You know, he was a veteran. He was one of the worst starting centers in the league and a team that wanted to lose a lot of games. And, you know, it was decent enough. I wish they'd kept him around longer, to be honest, because I think he would have been a good fit for Cade in that second season. But yeah, signing Jeremy Grant, whom he would ultimately trade for Jalen Duren, who continues to have a high ceiling, that was the best thing that Troy Weaver, or the front office, put it that way. So I said that I would qualify it as such. At the front office, I think the best move the front office has made, period. You know, even pending, if Duren becomes a really good player, it's still going to be one of the best moves that they made, because Grant was what allowed them to trade for the pick that became Duren. So you look beyond that, and my goodness, is this episode already getting long? Goodness gracious. So you look beyond that. It was pretty much just a litany of, we're going to trade for reclamation projects. We're going to trade second round picks for reclamation projects, or we're going to sign reclamation projects. And we're going to do that instead of putting any veterans on the team. And we're going to watch 100% of them fail, pending James Wiseman, which, I guess anybody's guess. I still don't think it looks that great. But that basically sums up what this front office has done. Again, I looked to 2021, and a little bit happened in 2022. But I looked at 2021, in which the Pistons got the first overall pick. And it's like, okay, well, generally you want to give some guys who can do the fundamentals around your first overall pick when it's like a really pick and roll heavy ball dominant handler. Okay, so, you know, let's, you know, at least ensure that he has a decent amount of shooting. Let's give him an athletic big to run on the pick and roll with. And cool, you know, we can maybe try out some reclamation projects as well. But, you know, we want to ensure that we have a half decent roster. Not in terms of, you don't have to have a roster that's going to win games, not necessarily, but a roster that has the fundamentals. They decided to throw that sort of conventional wisdom out the window and just go with more reclamation projects. Not only that, but trade away their athletic pick and roll big, who's Mason Plumlee, and start pick and claw Isaiah Stewart, who's terrible on the pick and roll, and they weren't going to have him be a shooter that season, so he was going to do nothing but get in Cade's way. They had way too many reclamation projects on the team. They had way too little in the way of shooting. You know, basically, if Killian didn't work out as shooting guard alongside Cade, and I get that they had to try, but the prospect of that ever working out was very low to, you know, pretty unathletic backcourt, but also two guys who are just going to be at their best with the ball in their hands. Basically, they got bailed out by Corey Joseph, of all players, becoming a good shooter when Killian just absolutely did a horrible job. But then Jeremy Grant was injured, and they didn't have enough shooters to even put another one in the starting lineup. You know, it was an idiotic disaster of an offseason. Like, incomprehensibly stupid. Move on to 2022. They did bring on Alec Burks. They got paid to bring on Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel. They took on that cap dump as part of the Jalen Duren trade. Jalen Duren, I think that was a good trade to make. Did end up being costlier than we would have thought because of what Jeremy Grant could have brought this team. But, you know, whatever. And then you make a pretty good trade to bring on Bojan Bogdanović. Cool. You end up trading Burks and Bojan later on. And what has ultimately been kind of like an addition by subtraction thing. Hopefully Grimes will work out. But other things, yeah, you dump Sekou, which probably was a pretty good move. You get assets for dumping Sekou, we'll put it this way, and bringing on DeAndre Jordan. Though certainly the front office has done hardly anything with the seconds they brought on. They've just traded away a lot of them for reclamation projects that haven't worked out, and then, you know, traded two of them for a reclamation project, and then traded another two to get rid of him. The Bagley contract wasn't great. Basically the front office has really struggled to bring on any, like the only way in which they've actually done anything on the margins is Duren and then Fontecchio in four seasons, you know, outside of Jeremy Grant. I mean, which we've already noted was a very good move. That is it. I mean, they've done a very, very bad job in terms of, and they've consistently failed to provide rosters that have anything in the way of solid fundamentals. And that comes up to this season. Last offseason was a disaster. You got $30 million in cap space. Monty Morris, okay, fine. But then spending $20 million on Joe Harris, who is not realistically going to provide you with anything, starting Isaiah Stewart at power forward, having no contingency plan in case either he doesn't work out or your power forward, you know, or he gets injured, having your backup centers, your backups to this still very young, very raw Jalen Duren be two reclamation projects. So in terms of how well they've done as just in terms of management, in terms of overall management, I mean, it's been real bad. Like, the Grant move was good. The Duren trade was good. The Bojan trade was good. This, you know, the Burks trade, you know, was all right. But I think that just lands them like in an out of five grade, like a 1.5. Like, on the management side of things, this front office has done a very bad job. I think that's pretty much unambiguous. They get a little bit better. And trading for Fontecchio, again, it's small sample size, but he looks like he can be a solid role player going forward. And we'll see about Quentin Grimes. But even if those two work out, you look and that's not a lot to show. You know, the good moves. Of course, Bojan and Burks, Grimes cost you that. So, and just the good moves they have made versus the bad moves they have made and what they have failed to do in terms of everstocking, including this season, this team with the fundamentals to just run a functional offense at all, period. And, you know, even just that, they've done a very bad job. They decided to deviate from conventional wisdom, and it's like, okay, be innovative by all means. But like, it's a big risk going the reclamation project heavy roster. And like, if half of them had worked out, we'd be feeling a lot better about it right now. But they took a big risk and they fell flat on their faces. Like, flat on their faces. And just in terms of finding talent on the margins, not great. All right, let's move on to the Magic. The big thing they did was they traded Vucevic for Wendell Carter Jr. and 2021 and 2023 first-round picks. This was one of the most lopsided trades, ultimately, of the last decade. Vucevic moved on to be pretty washed up I mean, Chicago is a little bit weird. I think they made, I mean, Chicago's got weird ownership. They got bad ownership, you know, like bottom five ownership. You can see based on what they did going up to the deadline this season with a team that may not even, you know, may not even make the playoffs this season, and with DeRozan going into free agency, and they did nothing. They didn't sell at all. So if they had gone on to make the playoffs that season, then this wouldn't look nearly as bad. They still would have lost a pick, but, you know, they wouldn't have looked as bad. In the event, Vucevic has turned out to be worse than Wendell Carter Jr., center who was traded for, who was sent over to the Magic in the trade. He's pretty washed. He's just nowhere near as good as offense as he used to be, and he's bad on defense. So even Wendell Carter Jr. for Vucevic has been a bad trade for the Bulls, and they lost the 2021 eighth pick, which turned into Franz Wagner. That was huge for the Magic. And 2023, which turned into Jet Howard, and who knows how that's going to go. But this was a major fleecing. This really made the rebuild for the Magic. That was a great trade for them. They got a little bit fortunate, of course, but that was just a really, really good trade. They traded Aaron Gordon for 2025 first, and RJ Hampton, who didn't do anything, ended up in the Pistons ultimately. And Denver's 2025 first is probably not going to be very good, but you know, they got an asset for the guy. And then beyond that, it's like, okay, they signed Mo Wagner, which was cute for him to be on the team with his brother. He's sometimes been okay and sometimes been decent and sometimes been bad. Goga Batadze, who knows if he'll still be on the team, but he gave them good minutes this season. Well, Wendell Carter Jr. was out and then on the bench. Otherwise, other than that, it's been pretty quiet, but I think you got to give them at least like a 4 out of 5 just for pulling off the Vucevic trade and just how good that turned out for them. The Rockets, I mean, both of these teams, the Pistons have been kind of the loudest team when it comes to free agency and trades, you know, considerably louder than the other three teams. I mean, this front office has put in work. They've just put in bad work, unfortunately. So you look at the Rockets. So the Isaiah Stewart trade, they got a future first, which they have made good use of. They also got a 2022nd first from the Blazers in that three-way trade. So they would ultimately use that first, along with the very heavily protected pick they got from the Wizards in the Westbrook Wall trade, to trade up for Şengün. And needless to say, that was a very, very adroit thing to do. That was very well done. And they traded, again, a combination of Tucker and Gordon in two separate trades for what would eventually become the Cam Whitmore pick. Solid. Beyond that, you signed Dylan Brooks, who was punched way above his weight. You signed Fred VanVleet, who has been pretty good for them. I mean, these are major overpays, but they turned out to be solid signings for the Rockets, who might make the play-in this year. So I'd give them a solid, maybe like 3 out of 5, just because they haven't done anything really remarkable, aside for trading for that pick for Şengün, which I think you put under drafting too, because they picked him at number 15. That's just a really good draft selection. So you got a solid 3 out of 5 for the Rockets. Nothing good. They didn't do particular. You know, they didn't, not particularly impressive, but solid enough. And then the Thunder, there's really not a lot here. Like they traded Steven Adams recently for the 2024 Nuggets. No, wait, I'm getting mixed up here. Okay, yeah, they traded Steven Adams to the Grizzlies, I believe. Can't remember when this was, for a 2023 Nuggets first, and Kemrick Williams, and do not know how to pronounce his name, who has actually done pretty well. And they later packaged, I believe, that Nuggets first with two firsts, which included the Pistons first, and I think Washington's first in 2023, heavily protected, for Osman Deng. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. That outcome of that, yeah, is yet to be determined. Grabbed the 2025 first to take on Al Horford. And they did trade like picks in 2020, which ended up being good players. And they traded this the pick that ended up being in Şengün, which was not really ideal. They traded up in 2023 draft by taking on Bertans so that they could take Kasem Wallace. Stocked up on seconds and signed Isaiah Joe. Here's the thing with the Thunder. I mean, it doesn't look particularly good. The thing is with the Thunder is that they've got so much in the way of assets that, I mean, they're just able to operate in a different way. So like in a vacuum, it's like, okay, this is like a 2 out of 5 way of doing, you know, this is like a 2 out of 5. I'm not including the seconds here because they got a ton of those and they still have a bunch of firsts. So it, like in terms of Thunder, like in context, I'd give them like a, I don't know, like a 2.5 or a 3, basically very, very average. They've got so much right now that, I mean, they have their youth and, you know, they've got a decent roster, and also they can make a splash. They can do something with all of these future first round picks. So they're kind of an exception here. They did well enough, nothing particularly good, nothing impressive. So basically where this leaves us is that the other teams here did a significantly better job of drafting than the Pistons. They all did better than the Pistons in terms of free agency and trades. The Thunder, again, didn't really do a ton of much of anything, but they're perfectly fine. Otherwise, they're perfectly fine anyway. And we get to like what they've got now, and what they've got now with the Thunder, a superstar whom they had already, a pretty strong supporting cast, strong youth, decent bench, a lot of cap space, a good coach, and tons of assets to parlay. The Rockets, promising young core, decent supporting cast, you know, a couple of good veterans, you know, fairly good coach, but they're in a position where they really need a leap from the youth, you know, whoever that is, they need a leap from the youth, whether that's Amen Thompson, whether that's Jalen Green, Terry Eason, Cam Whitmore. A lot of what happens with them at this point is going to depend upon development from the youth, but they're not incredibly dependent upon it. But if they want to become a contender, they gotta have at least one of those guys really step up. The Magic and strong young core, decent supporting cast. They need some more veterans. They have a very good coach. A lot of cap space this summer. The Thunder and the Magic will be competing with the Pistons this summer as cap space teams. They have less than the Pistons, but they still have a decent amount. They too are going to need a leap from the youth, but they're in a good position right now, certainly with room to grow. And then unfortunately we come to the Pistons, who as a result of not drafting well and doing pretty poorly in trades and free agency and have a mismatched young core, as we know, have a relatively poor supporting cast. I mean, it's a little bit better now with the additions of Fontecchio and Grimes, but you know, it's really pending in terms of Sasser, who may be a solid role player, we'll see. They don't have much stability in terms of veterancy. They are extremely dependent upon development at this point, like extremely. They have an absolutely horrendous coach, and they have tons of cap space, but they're far more dependent upon doing something with it than the other three. They have very little in the way of assets to parlay that aren't going to be selling low, like the current youth, for example, or trading away far future first-round picks, which this team should not be trading away at this point. So I'd hate to have this be kind of like a distressing conclusion to things, but that is a comparison of these rebuilds. Of course, this turned into far more long-winded than I thought. This is, I think, once I truncate silence here, is going to be about an hour and 5 minutes. So that's how we got to where we are. And thank you. I don't remember who submitted the question, but thank you. I had a good time doing the research on this, even if the conclusion, which kind of knew already, was not very happy. All right, folks, so that's going to be the end of this episode. As always, I want to thank you so much for listening. Hope you're all doing well. Catch you in next week's episode.